The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Christian Outlook, the weekly radio program that sorts through the issues in our fast-changing world in a way that honors your Christian faith. Brought to you in partnership with our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Gino Geraci. It's great to be with you. This week, a school board calls the police on parents objecting to political correctness taught in the schools.
It was deemed an unlawful assembly.
The Biden administration puts a scare into the economy.
Goods are becoming more rare. There's a ton of cash in the marketplace chasing these limited goods, and that's how inflation happens.
The latest COVID variant has some people worried all over again.
If we truly knew what Romans 13 said, we would not be so quick to go along with everything the state tells us to do.
And brace yourself, football fans.
NFL declares football is gay.
All this and more. You can hear my own program on 94.7 FM and 94.7FMTheWord.com. Take a moment to follow Christian Outlook on Twitter at TC Outlook. That's TC Outlook. And follow me as well at Geraci Gino. Great to be with you. As school districts begin implementing the controversial critical race theory, parents at first knew little or nothing about it. But facts began to trickle in. Parents soon realized critical race theory taught children that white supremacy and systemic racism is ingrained in the fabric of the United States. What we know of history was being pushed aside for an ideology rooted in bitterness. While much of the media glossed over the troubling facts, parents started doing their own research. And when they realized what they were dealing with, they began attending school board meetings. At some of them, the topic was critical race theory. At others was the issue of allowing boys who say they are girls to enter girls' bathrooms and locker rooms. Parents were finally fighting back. The effort was highlighted by a meeting in Loudoun County, Virginia, where school board members called police on concerned parents. Victoria Cobb, president of the Family Foundation of Virginia, discussed the events while on with Don Crow at WAVA in Washington, D.C.
Victoria, you and your organization were there, or at least I know your organization was represented, in that now historic, in the worst sense of the word, meeting. What do you have to tell us about your assessment of what went on?
Well, yes, our team was there, and it really was. Loudoun County has just become such a flashpoint for the hot issues of the day that are really happening all across the country and certainly across the Commonwealth, whether it's critical race theory or, in this particular case, transgender model policies, as they call them, this idea that we're going to no longer protect the right of every child to have their minds, hearts, and bodies protected by our school boards, but instead these policies that allow any child to enter any bathroom or locker room or changing space. So this county has just become such a flashpoint, and they did in fact have one of these policies on the agenda. And so hundreds of parents showed up to make their voices heard.
As I understand it also from some of the information from your office, the meeting started with a school board official forbidding disparaging public comments. And yet one of the first to speak out was an activist for the LGBT group who stated that hate was, quote, dripping from the followers of Jesus in this room. That kind of one-sided rhetoric was going on, right?
Well, this is the thing. The idea that hate speech comes in one direction is what the secular left wants to make it seem. But the reality is this was an incredibly divisive comment that did, of course, result in the room erupting with people reacting to such a comment, because, again, it had literally flew in the face of what had just been noted as going to be the sort of decorum for the meeting. And so, yeah, it did get very vocal. And then as the meeting progressed, they sort of paused at that point, kind of hit a reset button, And then when the comments continued, parent after parent saying that these are harmful policies. And then, of course, we got to the point where former Senator Dick Black, who is kind of a local hero to conservatives, has really stood for the family and for the unborn over the years, stood up and simply said what needed to be said to this board about what they were doing. And then people simply applauded, and they decided to shut down the whole meeting and no longer allow any more public comment after literally applause was the problem.
And on that note, I would say had it been in another direction, in other words, had the board heard something to their liking that got applause, I have to question whether or not they would have done the same thing and shut the meeting down. But I understand that there were some 300 people, give or take one or two, who were there, but only, what, 60 of them or so got to speak, and then they just closed the meeting down. What happened?
Yeah, there were hundreds registered to make, and only 1 minute comments were was all you were allowed. So people had to be very disciplined about what they were planning to say. But there were hundreds there, overwhelmingly on the side of protecting the innocence of our children, that were there to speak. And of course, yes, they only got through a couple of handfuls of comments before this happened. And so, yes, a lot of folks were not able to speak. So when they shut down the meeting, the room actually erupted into a beautiful singing of the Star Spangled Banner. I mean, just this impulsive reaction of just, this is America, this is freedom, this is what we stand for. And then one supporter invited others who had not gotten a chance to testify to just continue to testify, despite the fact that the board was unable to take the crowd and had left the room. But, it was still a meeting of parents that were concerned. And so they continued to take public comment until it was deemed an unlawful assembly and became, you know, a situation that law enforcement stepped in. It was really disappointing to see the whole thing result in that.
Was this the case of John Tiggs, who is a concerned citizen of Loudoun County himself? And in fact, I understand a community leader as well. And he got arrested, am I right?
Yes, he got a trespassing citation simply for continuing to testify at a school board meeting. Actually, which important to note, had not actually been adjourned. It had been shut down for public comments. The board was not in the room any longer, but it's just amazing to me that it can be a public meeting. They can just walk out, and then you can get kicked out of the room. And so that's the situation at hand. And for a lot of parents, it was an incredibly disappointing situation because it seems that sometimes our local elected officials are unwilling to hear from those who are most at stake, the parents of our children in our communities, who are standing up and simply saying, these policies are bad. We're deeply concerned about their child's right to expect physical safety and privacy in vulnerable areas. And that's all they came to say, and they came to be strong about that because they've seen this board do many things that have harmed children in the past, whether it's critical race theory or, this is, as you might recall, the same board that instantly disciplined Tanner Cross for speaking at a school roommate. That was a teacher who simply said, I'm not going to be able to follow this policy because, first of all, I'm a phys ed teacher, and I know that a biological boy cannot ultimately become a biological girl. We can't pretend that that's actually possible. And then he said, and I serve God, and my faith would not allow me to participate in the way this policy that you're proposing would work. So this is the same board that then put him on administrative leave. So they've created a very, very hostile environment for those who stand for both basic biology and for our own children's rights.
Heading into the 4th of July last weekend, the White House put out a message on Twitter claiming the cost of food is cheaper under President Joe Biden. From gas prices to the cost of meat, most Americans know that isn't true. And the unbridled spending has economists warning of a looming jump in inflation. Kristen Tate has been covering this issue in a series of articles for The Hill. She explained the danger while on with Kevin McCullough on AM 570, The Mission in New York City.
A lot of people are going to say, come on, Kristen, the government had to do something. You know, the economy was crashing. Everything got shut down. People were going out of business. So the government had to come in and step in and be our savior. You're being a little hard on them now, aren't you? That's what they're going to say. Why are those critics wrong?
Well, the vaccine is available now. That's the first thing. So anyone who wants a vaccine can get one. So the pandemic is effectively over. For anyone who wants to be protected against COVID, they can. So there's really no reason people can't go back to work. Right now, the federal government, through these federal unemployment bonuses, plus many states, are paying people more than they make in critical blue-collar jobs. So what that means is right now we have people who are not driving trucks with raw materials in them or working at warehouses or ports or, you know, all of these different jobs that we need to make our economy function and keep prices low. People who would work those jobs are now in many states making far more staying at home than they would doing these jobs. So what does that mean? It means that consumer prices will go up because goods are becoming more rare. There's a ton of cash in the marketplace chasing these limited goods, and that's how inflation happens. I mean, that's literally the textbook definition of inflation.
You highlight a number of areas in which this kind of blue-collar shortage is being experienced, and it has everything to do with transportation to even big companies like Amazon losing workers. Talk to me about the impact of the wide reach of the different industries that are involved here.
Oh, yeah. It's impacting nearly every single industry, and especially with the truck drivers. I mean, this is going to impact everything from the food we buy to the lumber we use to construct buildings. I mean, everything. Gas prices, menu prices at restaurants, everything's going up in price because of this. And, you know, you just walk around in any city, you'll see tons of help wanted signs on the doors. In fact, in my hometown in New Hampshire, the local Dunkin' Donuts has been closed for over a year. And the owner of the franchise literally put a sign on the door that says, "We're not open because we can't find anyone to work here. If you want to work here, please call this number." I mean, business owners are so desperate for workers right now. I have some small business owners in my family as well, particularly my stepmother who owns some restaurants, and she's having a hard time getting people to show up for work too. So it really impacts every area of our society, every industry, and the end result is higher cost goods, less variety, and, you know, this is all going to crash hard soon. And by the time people realize what's going on, they're going to get mad and it'll be too late probably to reverse course. The economic damage will be done. That's what's really scary about it.
You talk about a couple of different things that the Biden administration could do. Not that he's going to be, not that he's shown any inclination to do such things, but he could do two things right now to correct this. What would you encourage him to do?
Well, the very first thing they need to do is stop paying people not to work. So we've got to stop with the federal unemployment bonuses. There are millions and millions of jobs available in this country, and we need people to fill those positions. The vaccines are available, so COVID's really not an excuse anymore not to work. So that's the first thing, stop paying people not to work. The second thing is we need more restraint within the Federal Reserve. So we need to stop printing money and stop passing these big boondoggle spending deals with money that we just don't have. It's driving up inflation, it's getting our country into further debt, and it's devaluing all of our savings. So those are the two primary things. Stop paying people not to work and stop printing money.
Coming up, Los Angeles County is telling residents to put those masks back on.
If we truly knew what Romans 13 said, we would not be so quick to go along with everything the state tells us to do.
Frank Sontag, When the Christian Outlook, returns in a moment. Stay with us.
As we consider a post-COVID world, the call goes forth to a new generation of leaders in politics and policy. I'm Pete Peterson, Dean of Pepperdine's Graduate School of Public Policy. And for over two decades, we've prepared students to apply America's founding principles to today's policy debates. Are you considering graduate school? Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to The Christian Outlook. I'm Gino Geraci. COVID-19 has all but vanished from the land. While we have not completely rid it from our midst, daily new cases and deaths have plummeted to insignificant levels. Then along comes the Delta variant. And the county of Los Angeles goes back to recommending masks. The vaccine still protects from this version of COVID. So why are people still living in fear? Frank Sontag, our Salem host out of KKLA in Los Angeles, wonders the same.
The Delta variant is on the way. Oh, my goodness gracious. It's the end of the world, take two. Mask up, hide out, be afraid. It's coming to get you. We know COVID 99% plus of those that contracted survive. And yet you're told to take the jab, take the shot, be patriotic, a whole lot of other things. L.A. County Department of Public Health said in a statement, quote, public health strongly recommends people wear masks indoors in settings such as grocery or retail stores, theaters, and family entertainment centers and workplaces when you don't know everyone's vaccination status. Right? Some odds about who's been vaccinated and who hasn't. You been reading any of the stories lately? Israel, one of the most vaccinated countries in the world, they've had an outbreak of COVID. Positive tests. But we hear this black and white somehow, the vaccine, as if Moderna, Pfizer, J&J are all the same thing. They're not. But somehow, get the shot and you'll be good. When if you listen to the latest fear porn, as it applies to the Delta variant, they're kind of saying, well, you may or may not be inoculated against this big, bad variant that's coming. We've spent a year afraid to hug each other. Do you think that doesn't have an effect on the psyche or on populations or societies? Don't get me going on deaths of despair, people committing suicide, drug addiction, all of these things, because we have believed the powers that be, they know better for us. And early on in the pandemic, we all stayed home and were terrified. And then you have people like Anthony Fauci, flip-flops more than a Delta smelt out of water. We believe him like he's the expert. Or the CDC head, who completely contradicted herself the other night, made up statistics. What am I trying to say here? I'm trying to say this. There are things in this world that we as Christians should be in conflict with. When we're told certain things by the powers that be, if we truly knew Scripture, if we truly knew what Romans 13 said, we would not be so quick to go along with everything the state tells us to do. The damage that we have let evolve and deteriorate our very world, middle class, small businesses going by the wayside, because of a virus where 99%+ of the people survive? Do you really think this is about COVID? It's about getting your information. It's about taking your freedom away. Wake up. Oh, yeah, I'll put my name in a data bank. I need to fly in a plane, so I'm going to have that passport. But the thing is, we've given our freedoms up so willingly. And I suspect it's because some of us don't even know what freedom means. You start hearing this idea that the government, we need the government. The government is the people. Knowing nothing about history, nothing about literally brainwashing. Oh yeah, I'll stay home. I don't want to work. Why would I work when I get a check from the government? That's cool. Or I want free health care. Or pay my school, or government save me from myself. You have critical race theory being taught, that somehow this is about racism. This is all a big distraction against what I see as the number one reason of all of this. It's a move of socialism to take away your freedoms. And don't get me going on the church. When I look to the congregations, are people on fire for the Lord? Do people understand evil? That truth is being presented as a lie, and more to the point, lies are presented as truth. And the church goes along with it hook, line, and sinker. We're supposed to be in conflict with things of this world, Christian. Sin should not sit right with you. Well, it's Pride Month. I want to love people. Why would I get upset about, oh, I don't know, an Olympic athlete turning her back on the podium when the national anthem plays? Or why should I care about a transgender, quote-unquote, woman winning Miss USA when biologically she's a he? Why would I get upset about that kind of thing? Why should I care? Jesus said to love my neighbor. Here's why. You should have a righteous anger about things that grieve the heart of God. And if you don't, maybe you got a little too much sin in your own life.
When it comes to political correctness, there are few institutions untouched by the madness. The NFL held out for a while, but now they're fully infected. Here's Bob Burney from WRFD 880 in Columbus, Ohio.
Here is a headline from USA Today. NFL declares football is gay.
What?
NFL declares football is gay. I thought people were gay. Straight, homosexual, lesbian, bisexual. I thought this only referred to people. No, not any longer. Now sports can have a gender. What am I talking about? The NFL just rolled out a 30-second spot advertisement, commercial. And the 30-second advertisement begins by stating, football is gay. Football is lesbian. Football is beautiful. Football is queer. Football is life. Football is exciting. Football is culture. Football is transgender. Football is queer. Football is heart. Football is power. Football is tough. Football is bisexual. Football is strong. Football is freedom. Football is American. Football is accepting. Football is everything. Football is for everyone. That's the text of the advertisement produced, distributed, and aired by the National Football League. It is no longer about guys on the field doing their best, playing their best, providing entertainment for the crowd that comes to watch them. It's no longer about camaraderie. It is no longer about excellence. It is now about pushing a perverted ideology and lifestyle down your throat. And here's my honest question. Have you had enough? Have you had enough of this lifestyle being crammed down your throat, in your face? I promise you, anybody in the NFL who disagrees with this ad publicly will find out football is not for everyone. Because this is the way the liberal left works.
Coming up, wokeness is advancing. It's imperial in our public square. It's imperial in the church. And it takes no prisoners. The Christian Outlook returns in a moment. Welcome back to the Christian Outlook, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. I'm Gino Geraci. Those referred to as woke are at the center of cancel culture. The very people who want even George Washington's name removed from schools because he owned slaves. They're an unforgiving group who expect perfection, their version of perfection, from everyone at all times. It's hard to imagine, but for some, the term woke is a badge of honor. And along the path, the concept is even finding a home in some churches. Owen Strawn is the author of the new book titled Christianity and Wokeness, How the Social Justice Movement is Hijacking the Gospel and the Way to Stop It. He explained the progress of wokeness while on with Salem host Eric Metaxas.
Owen Strawn, welcome to my program.
Thank you, Eric. We have a long history with my last name. The last time you tried to pronounce it, it became a video on Twitter.
Oh, stop it. I didn't see that. Did I see that?
No, you said Strachan.
Strachan.
And then I tried to correct you, and yeah.
I know. I'm sorry about that. But listen, I really do think I go out of my way not just to pronounce things correctly, but to spell them correctly, because I want my audience to look you up.
Thank you.
The book is Christianity and Wokeness. Now, let's start. I'm a writer, and I care about words. The word wokeness is a hideous neologism, but we're at a point where we have to use these hideous words. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about Christianity and wokeness and the social justice movement, we all know what you mean. But why did you write this book? A lot of people are talking about these kinds of things. And before you answer that question, tell my audience who you are, what you're doing right now.
Yeah, so I'm a provost and research professor of theology at Grace Bible Theological Seminary in Conway, Arkansas. So that's what I do for a living. So I train pastors, Baptist pastors in Arkansas. Love doing that. And as part of the overflow of that work, I wanted to try to respond to this ideology we call wokeness, because wokeness is advancing. It's imperial in our public square. It's imperial in the church, and it takes no prisoners. Basically, wokeness is the idea that you and I, all people, need to wake up to the nature of racial injustice in America. And then we need to wake up furthermore and advance social justice in America. And so these terms, as you said, they're playing with their own set of Scrabble tiles, and they know the meaning, but few people out there in the church and in America more broadly know the meaning. And so Christianity Wokeness is an attempt to distinguish the truth from the counterfeit.
I did a panel that you moderated. That was you, wasn't it? There's
it
not
was
another
me.
Owen Strawn. With Charlie Kirk and Vody Balcom. And I didn't say it then, but I'll say it now. Social justice, if people want to be clear, what is social justice? Here's the short version of it. And remember this because it's important. Social justice is injustice. Mm-hmm. People need to understand that. Social justice is injustice. It's a guaranteed outcome. We know that doesn't work. If it did work, I'd be all for it. It doesn't work. It is unjust. And people need to understand, when you hear social justice, be 99.9% suspicious. Some good people get confused, but don't be one of them.
That's exactly right. Social justice is the idea that if you see inequality out there, that you are seeing evil. So if you see disparities between different racial groups, you're seeing automatic evidence of injustice. And so social justice says, oh, there's inequality. So what we need to do is we need to level society, because white supremacy is really that which is causing this injustice. And if we just take away white supremacy in all its forms, white privilege, then we're going to make the world a just and fair place. And everybody will have a quality of outcome. If you white people, with your Christianity and your heteronormativity, your patriarchalism and your support of the free market, would just stop being who you are, then everything would be equal. And everybody would have the same household income, education, level of flourishing. And honestly, Eric, it's just nuts. That's the technical term.
Well, I mean, it is nuts. It's preposterous. It's silly. But young people are getting dramatically sucked in by this because it sounds good. All their friends are into it. And I think that it's kind of, it's incredibly dangerous. And so we need to be on the march to tell people, you need to wake up to the fact that wokeness is based on lies. It'll mess you up. It'll mess up the culture. If you care about the urban poor, wokeness and everything that goes along with that is going to harm those people. And you need to understand it is going to harm them. Just because people say, no, this is good, doesn't make it good.
That's exactly right. Actually, what wokeness is going to do is it's not going to tear down racist structures. It's going to advance them. Wokeness works hand in glove with leftism. And if we've seen anything of a track record in leftism in this country and other countries as well, we've seen that it does not advance human flourishing, and it squelches it. And so what we want to do, I argue in this book, Christianity and Wokeness, is we want to promote biblical justice. We want to promote the biblical gospel. We want to promote the Christian worldview, because that is actually how people are going to recover human dignity. Knowing that you're an image bearer, a doctrine that you've done a lot of work on in your writing, I've done some work on, knowing that you're an image bearer absolutely changes your conception of the world and of society, because now every single person has dignity.
Coming up,
critical race theory says it's against racism, but what it actually foments is racism.
More from Metaxas and Strawn when the Christian Outlook returns in a moment.
As we consider a post-COVID world, the call goes forth to a new generation of leaders in politics and policy. I'm Pete Peterson, Dean of Pepperdine's Graduate School of Public Policy. And for over two decades, we've prepared students to apply America's founding principles to today's policy debates. Are you considering graduate school? Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Christian Outlook. I'm Gino Geraci, host of Crosswalk on 94.7 FM The Word in Denver. The race issue has hit the church rather hard, and while churches have wrestled with race issues for decades, this version of the struggle is new. The woke element has changed it entirely. Here's more from the conversation between Owen Strawn and Eric Metaxas.
You're not looking at humanity as a widget. You're not looking at all white people as if there's an average white person, as if they belong to this collective Borg called whiteness. There's no such thing as whiteness.
But see, that's the key. There is no such thing as whiteness. And so when people talk about this, everybody gives them a pass. And I just want to say, whoa. You have no idea what you're talking about. What does it even mean to be white or black? These are utterly arbitrary. My father is Greek. So does that make me slightly less white because I'm close to the Mediterranean? Are the Swedes more white? What in the world are we talking about? And it's almost like we are people who insist on these ideas. They are almost trying to force everyone to go back to before the Civil War, when in America these things were kind of clear, right?
Yes.
There were people that were enslaved. Now, obviously, not all black people in America were enslaved. But the point is that we understand if you want to go back there, at least we could have a conversation about this. But in this day and age, when we've had a black president for two terms, what in the world are we talking about? And I want to ask you, if we're talking about black and white, does black... we all know that people are inherently racist. We're sinful, right? Mm-hmm. So we always kind of draw these lines like there's us and them or whatever. But that's within the black community. I mean, you talk to black people of a certain age, and they will tell you that there's racism within the black community. You know, light-skinned people are looked at a certain way and whatever. Nobody talks about that today. So the point is, this is not something that only belongs to white people. All of this kind of thinking belongs to every human being who's a sinner.
That's right. Critical race theory says it's against racism, but what it actually foments is racism. And it's based upon the Marxist construct that all of America is divided, or all of society, really, is divided into either being an oppressor or being an oppressed person. And that's based on your belonging to an aggregate group. So in this era, in the 21st century, CRT and wokeness argue that if you have white skin, you're part of that aggregate group. Again, you're part of the white Borg, if you will.
Which is inherently racist.
Which is
racist. Reducing me to some kind of group. I mean, really, it's like saying you're a Jew, wear the yellow star, and shut up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really essentially reductive.
It is.
It's anti-biblical because it's reductive. Because God doesn't see us that way.
God doesn't see us that way. God cares about the individual. God cares about an individual person's status and well-being. God has set up the world so that even if you're not a believer, frankly, there is what we call common grace in the world. It's not a second grace. It's God showing grace to those who are not believers. And so we deal with a God who treats us as individuals, and we as Christians need to treat people as individuals. Now, every person needs the gospel of Jesus Christ. Every person needs to be born again, remade, regenerated through the gospel of God's grace. But that foundation shows us that Christianity does not start from this foundation that I know you, I can stereotype you by how you look. No, instead, I should know you in terms of the image of God, every person bearing it.
People need to understand there's two worldviews. One is an atheistic or anti-theistic Marxist view, and the other one is a biblical view. So what do you say to some young hip pastor? He's got his tattoos. He's got the soul patch, and he shaved his head because his hair was starting to go, and he's got funky glasses, and he's just trying to reach out to the young people, and they're into this junk. What do you say to that guy?
Yeah, I want to say that fundamentally we're not trying to make Christianity cool. We're not trying to make it culturally acceptable. We're not trying to be accepted by the world. That's a huge part of what I say in this book, Christianity and Wokeness. I say that there's an antithesis. There's an old-fashioned word for you. You don't hear that every day.
No, you don't.
But
I like to keep it that way, please.
Okay.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I like my word.
Go ahead. I like it. Go ahead.
All right. Well, there's an
I like it better than hegemon.
Yeah, I don't like that word
no,
either.
No, me either.
Okay. Well, we're agreed on that. There's an antithesis between Christianity and the world. We're not the same. Jesus, when he comes, is not the same as the world. Jesus and the devil are not the same. And so we start from that foundation. We recognize that as Christians, we're not trying to do this makeover of Christianity where we put makeup on it and make it palatable to the outside world. That's been a common way to try to attract people into the church. The seeker-sensitive movement has promoted that kind of thinking. That's not sound biblical Christianity.
If only Jesus had been at Willow Creek, he might have had, who knows, maybe 16, 18 disciples.
Instead of just 12.
You know, it could have happened, man.
Yeah.
He needed to be more seeker-friendly. He was always, you know, doing this divisive stuff, you got to eat my flesh, and it's like, come on, man, you got to reach the young people. That turns them off, that cannibalistic stuff.
Yeah, and as our friend Vody Bakum has said, this whole movement dovetails with the idea that Christianity is about niceness, it's about acceptance, it's about cultural palatability. Look, we're not going out of our way to be an idiot as a Christian. We're trying to bear the fruits of the Spirit, Galatians 5, 22 to 23. But we recognize that as Christians, Jesus has already told us that it is blessed for us to be persecuted and hated for righteousness' sake in Matthew 5. So what I want to say to that pastor is, bro, preach the gospel boldly. Preach the whole counsel of God. Preach the despised doctrines of God's word, the ones that people love inherently and the ones that they don't love. The justice of God is as important as the love of God is, but you don't often hear that.
Well, you know, I was going to say, there's an irony here. The truth is attractive. In other words, we always say, like, well, the truth will drive people away. Well, as much as it might drive some people away, it will attract other people. When you say, because I'm a Christian, I will not buy products from a company that is doing business with communist China and that is turning a blind eye toward the torture and murder and suffering of Uyghur Muslims. So I'm not a Muslim, and I'm not planning to be a Muslim, but they are human beings made in the image of God. And as a Christian, I'm commanded by the God who died for me to care about those Uyghur Muslims. And therefore, for me, this is an issue. It's an issue of human rights, of conscience. I would say if we try to sell that idea, a lot of young people can say, you know, I'd not heard that. So there are people suffering around the world, and because of a Christian, you care about them. You're a Christian, you care about them, even though they're not Christians. I think a lot of people would say, wow, I didn't realize that that's where Christianity leads you. I just thought it was, you know, kind of dull and theological.
Coming up, Jack Phillips discusses the attacks on his faith.
A man called me up and said, I'm on my way to your shop. I've got a gun.
When the Christian Outlook returns in a moment.
Come and see. Look on this mystery. The Lord of the universe. Nailed to a tree.
Welcome back to the Christian Outlook. I'm Gino Geraci. Few believers in our country have had to deal with the persecution that Masterpiece Cake Shop owner Jack Phillips has faced. He's won at the Supreme Court level, but that hasn't stopped those who seek to destroy his business, including the leaders in my own home state of Colorado. I spoke recently with Phillips on 94.7 FM The Word in Denver.
Tell me a little bit about the wear and tear emotionally, spiritually, on you and your family.
Yeah, sure, Gino. I knew that I was going to own my own bakery way back in the 70s, and it mm-hmm. wasn't until shortly after that that I knew that it would be a bakery that was a cake shop, mm-hmm. Masterpiece Cake Shop. The name of it came to my mind right away back then because Masterpiece says art and Cake Shop says cake. And I was going to be able to use the cake as a canvas to help people celebrate important events in their life. But Masterpiece also, the first part of Masterpiece is master. And I knew that in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus said, no man can serve two masters. And so I want to make sure as I come to my shop every day, who am I going to serve? But I knew I would be able to serve everybody that came in my shop, but I wouldn't be able to express every message. And right from the beginning, my wife and I decided we wouldn't create cakes that celebrated Halloween or cakes that were anti-American or racist or anything like that, cakes that would insult people, even people who identify as LGBT. But we also knew that we couldn't create cakes that celebrated same-sex marriages. And back then in the 90s when we opened the shop, that wasn't on anybody's radar. But we knew that those things were cakes that we couldn't create, but it was never the person asking for them. It was always the cake or the message involved in the cake. And so since the two men came in and a 20-second conversation that turned my world upside down, we've had so many different things happen here. Right away, they left, yelling at me, screaming at me, and flipping me off. And then I got hateful, vile phone calls. Right after that, 20 minutes later, the phone started ringing, and it just didn't stop for days and days and days. It was crazy, including I write about one story in The Cost of My Faith where a man called me up and said, I'm on my way to your shop. I've got a gun.
Right.
And I'm gonna blow your head off.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just craziness over, you know, a cake that I can't create because it celebrates a different view of marriage than the biblical view. But we also then had to go to court through the administrative law court. They told me that if I'm going to continue making wedding cakes, that I have to make wedding cakes for everybody who comes in, and same-sex wedding cakes or whatever. So we knew that we wouldn't be able to continue creating wedding cakes and help people celebrate that. Very important.
That wraps up this edition of the Christian Outlook. To hear my entire conversation with Jack Phillips, go to ChristianOutlook.com. If you enjoyed our program, take a moment to subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Google Play, and never miss these and other great conversations. Start at ChristianOutlook.com. Thanks for joining us today. Our program has been brought to you in part through our partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. For executive producer Russell Shubin and producers Charlie Richards and David Pichon and Mike Cook, I'm Gino Geraci. Join us again next time for the Christian Outlook.